Blog Talk Radio.
This is Scott Smith, and this is Down South and Dirty with Kadada Gray, and we're having some technical issues this morning, so please apologize.
We have more than technical issues, because you said good afternoon, and I'm over here confused. Like, don't rush my day now. It's only 10 o'clock in the morning.
It's craziness just went down on my phone, so not on the computer. But anyway, we're here, we're live, and this is one of those things about being doing live shows. So just bear with us. Hear me?
Hey, I can hear you now.
All right, good. All right, everybody. Today's show is Carving Out a Life in America. You know, we talk about this in our various spaces in our circles about how the American dream has been a little bit harder to realize than it has been for, you know, like our parents or grandparents particularly. It was stated that with us, me and Kadada, both Gen Xers, that Gen X has not achieved, that there's like a metric that we reach certain levels of wealth attainment by the time we're 35, such as owning a home, having so many years on the job, this, that, and the other, by the time you're 35, that Gen Xers have not achieved, that past generations have. And the millennials are also on track not to hit that mark either. They're looking at, for us, it may be in our mid-40s to early 50s for Gen X, and similar outcomes for the millennials. And this has to do with a lot of the rising costs of living, that we have stagnated wages, and that we also have economic and political policies that are not conducive to the American dream. So on this episode, we're going to talk about that extensively. And also toward the end of the show, we're going to talk about the Iowa caucuses and the first in the nation voting. So y'all, get prepared, because this is going to be an interesting show. So, Kadada,
yes, guys.
Tell us about,
morning,
you know,
everyone.
Good morning. So, tell us about, because I want to start off with policy. Because right now I know down at the Gold Dome, they are doing a lot when it comes to budgeting and this, that, and other that's going to affect everyday Georgians in ways that I don't think people can foresee. So let's talk about that first, and then we can go into how these policies are affecting us.
Can we pray first? Because this upsets me a whole lot every time I do this. So I'm going to try not to get all fired up as I usually get over the budget. So this past week was not actually budget or the appropriation committee meetings. It was the prior week, but everyone knows like we were off for a weekend. And so long story short of it all, last year the governor asked for a 4% budget cut, stating that he wanted to watch the budget and make sure that we were safe and sound. Now, what also happened was that, and I'm sure we've already forgotten, is that in 2017, under the federal tax reform, Georgia decided to cut income taxes from 6% to 5.75% in 2018, which effectively meant in 2019 that if we had actually received federal monies from our president, because that's what was the promise from the president, that if you give these cuts, there'd actually be more monies coming into the state. And I'm sure Georgia is not the state, the only state that's dealing with this. And so when we rolled into 2019, there would be an additional tax cut of 0.25% for 2020. Okay? So I need to give a little background because, like, the question is, how did we get here, and are we really in a bad place? So as I'm still learning about budgets and how we get our money in the state of Georgia, well, I found it very interesting that Georgia is one of the few states that 51% of our overall tax revenue comes from individual income tax, and only about 5 to 10% actually comes from corporations. So that raised my eyebrow just a little bit. Like, wait a minute, we are one of the top states for business, and yet we get all of our, majority of our money is derived from the people, right? So I guess that's why businesses come here, because we want to give away the pot for everybody. So now during the appropriations committee meetings, it was like a free-for-all, because here we are looking at the 2020 budget, and the governor now has asked for an additional 6%. So when he began, and now we're cumulatively at a 10% budget cut, which a lot of it comes from the fact that the federal government, all these tax credits, tax whatever, abatements that was supposed to come from the federal government did not arrive in Georgia. So we got played by the president of the United States. No one should be surprised by that. So to give some highlights that are just completely frustrating to me. You know, I spoke last time about the behavioral health and developmental disabilities, right? It's about $35 million in cuts. Department of Human Services, $29 million in cuts. Department of Corrections, $54 million. Department of Public Health, $16 million. Department of Education, $12 million, where there's always kind of like this tongue-in-cheek process of saying, well, we're not really touching education. We don't want to touch education budget, but we do. Department of Transportation, $11 million. Department of Agriculture, $1.8 million. So it is extremely interesting to me how Georgia claims to be a supporter of families, of children, a good safe haven for adults, a good safe haven to, you know, grow your family. That's with the caveat, if your child is healthy, if you have money, if you have your own health insurance, because if you need health insurance, if your child has some type of disability, if you're an adult with a disability, if you are someone that needs representation in the court because you need a public defender, Georgia is not the place for you to be here, because with these budget cuts, it impacts us at great length in our everyday lives. So, for instance, to give a real concrete example, you know, the governor is talking about how we have this gang program, this gang problem in Georgia. This is like his initiative, right? Like the gang problem. There's words on the street that he's really targeting so-called gangs. If you guys can see me, I'm doing air quotes, the so-called gangs, because, you know, a lot of white women left the Republican Party and swung to, you know, come to the Democratic Party. So let's scare all the white women to come back and say that there's a gang problem in Georgia. Well, let's say you get arrested in this gang issue warfare attack that's going on, and, well, you don't have any money. Well, guess what? The governor is proposing a $3 million reduction in public defender funding. Yet, he's allocating an additional $3.2 million for assistant district attorneys to try cases. There's no social justice here. There's it's kind of crazy. I'm looking for a phrase that the Democrats are using, and I think it's called moral budgeting. The budget should be, I'm going to read the quote directly. And it's, the budget is not only the blueprint of the financial priorities for the state, but it is a moral document of who and what we value in Georgia.
Right.
I promise y'all, this 2020 budget, 2019 budget, this 10% budget cut does not meet the criteria of that statement at all. Because we are harming individuals in the state of Georgia.
I would disagree with you and say that it does. Because it lets at least the party that is in control lets us know what they value versus what we as a total population value. When I first saw that particular bill, what you were talking about, with gang problems, and I followed the gang issue, and we actually have less of a gang issue than we had when I was growing up. Now, and the thing is that this is not going, you know, they made the example for why they did it based on using a white gang. But we know this is not going to be them going in and attacking white kids. This is going to be black kids, Hispanic kids, and Asian kids. And they're just doing finding another way to wage war on the poor and find other ways to exploit our labor. Because what we keep, and I like to tell people about this and get this in their head. Remember the 13th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. And what form can you have involuntary servitude in America? It is when you commit criminal and they lock you up, they can enslave you. And we know one of the booming industries in Georgia and in a lot of states is the corrections industry. Yep. And you have prison factories where they pay these people, quote unquote, like $2.33 an hour so they can have some money on their books because, you know, you don't run that one in slave. But they have no choice whether or not they want to work there or not. If that's what they assign you, that's what you're doing. So you get this extremely cheap labor pool. That is basically slave wages. And you can put these people to work and knock out all kinds of stuff. Prisons make more than license plates now. Because you think license plates got made in prisons. Yeah, yeah. But you got other items, just clothing.
Their reservations.
There's all kinds of things
are made.
Right. You got all kinds of things being produced, all kinds of services being given from people who are sitting in behind bars. And the greater that capacity, the greater the need, the more they need people in the jail. So then they start increasing the penalties and the length of the penalties to get more people in the jail and get them to stay longer. And we don't see this. And this affects us.
Interesting.
And this affects us
really
inside.
Interesting. The Department of Corrections has a $54 million budget cut that's coming their way. And a lot of those budget cuts, and most of those departments are staff. Whether it we are trying to increase the amount of staff or we're going to reduce. So a lot of these positions are going to be unfilled. So here we are asking the Department of Corrections to cut $54 million when there's a gang task force that's being created, which was funded, which is being funded by the governor, just to let you all know, to be able to identify gangs and put networks in place to identify gangs, which means that there's going to be a lot more kids. I'm going to say it really what it is. It's going to probably be a lot of young people between the ages of 16 and 25 being arrested, putting in jail, because they're not going to be able to afford a lawyer. We're going to reduce the amount of public defenders, so access to a public defender is going to be low and slow. So representation for that is going to be really at a minimum. And then these people are going to sit in jail where the jails are now understaffed.
Which means there's increased violence, sexual assault,
violence,
and all that stuff. So we just making a pool, a cesspool, out of what's going on. But let's now talk about how this translates to what's going on for those of us who are outside of the walls of these jails. That's a decrease in our neighborhoods, because that's also the stabilizing of some families, because you're going to have fathers, mothers, sons, daughters getting arrested, upsetting the way families operate. And then some of these families are going to attempt to defend their children, and they're going to spend what little money they have trying to get a lawyer.
Yep.
So you increase talking about an increased burden, because we talk about the cost of health care in this country, but we don't talk about the cost of freedom in this country. How much does it cost for you to keep your freedom in America? Because you get a traffic ticket, you go to court. The fines are too high, so you got to be put on probation so you don't go to jail. So you got to not be, so you now got to pay this, you got to pay your fine plus the maintenance fee for you being on probation.
Don't forget you're losing money because you're not at work making money,
right,
especially if you're an hourly employee.
Got to spend time off to go to see your probation officer. You know, now some probation officers will work with you, they know you got a job, this, that, and the other. You know, you can call in, but you still at some point got to go by there to give them your money, because a lot of them don't do online payments or nothing that's convenient, because it's supposed to be convenient to be on probation because you did something wrong. You know, you was going 10 miles over the speed limit. You are a danger to society. So, yeah, this is how we criminalize being poor in this country, which makes it harder for the American dream to be realized. You know, you got stacking health care costs. Now you got the cost of keeping your freedom stacked on top of that. And you'd be surprised if you look inside of our courtroom every day. They ain't in there trying to find out if you're innocent or not. In some cases, the stuff that you did can very easily be thrown out with a slap on the hand. Because some people, this may be their first or maybe the second time getting a traffic ticket. I can see that you've been in there like 15 times in a year because you was a speeder. You know what I'm saying? But hell, and if you've ever driven on the roads, particularly here in Atlanta, you can't help but speed.
Well, you can't get on 285 and pace it and be like at 45 miles an hour on 285. You gotta go above the speed limit.
They pushing you, because if you don't, you can ran the fuck over. Excuse my language. They gonna run you over. Everybody out there trying to do it. So, you know, America is kind of like a catch-22. To survive, you got to do stuff that looks like breaking the law. And that we, and our legislators, and this is why I get to talking about policy being made. Our legislators are making laws to make it more difficult to live in America so that they can get tax revenue or they can get revenue. Because let me explain to you how the Republican logic works on raising funds. Taxes are bad, but fees and fines are good. If they can figure a way to reduce the tax and add a fine or a fee to something to make you pay extra, then it makes no sense, because you could get the same money. You're going to spend the same amount of money either way. they just say, well, you know, you can choose not to use this service. But most of the things you add in taxes, fees, and fines to are things that we have to do. Like, for instance, we have to have auto insurance in the state of Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Have to have it. And you got to pay it. If you don't, there, you know, you lose your license, which then allows you to, you know, it makes it really difficult to be able to, you know, maintain a job or do anything in this state. I mean, not having a driver's license, some people don't even want to accept your ID. They want to see a driver's license.
Which is odd because nowadays so many people just use Uber, right?
Yeah, inside the company, yeah, people use it. And that's a whole, and that gets into a whole other thing that I really want to get to talk about here in a second. Because we start stacking all these different agenda items on people that they have to do. And when they are not making the wages, because wages are stagnant, the cost of living continues to rise, then people start falling into these cracks. Okay? We also have a problem that's paramount over health costs and cost of freedom is the ability to find affordable housing. And that's being made more and more difficult by our local municipalities and our county government. Because
I want to give you the average rent. I want to give you the average 1 and 2 bedroom rent cost in the state of Georgia. But first, I'm going to have you guess what you think is the average 1 bedroom rent is in Atlanta. In Atlanta.
$950?
No. The average, and now when I say, and I'm talking about Atlanta Metro, right? So let's make sure we're talking about Atlanta Metro. The average 1 bedroom with a decrease from last year of 1.51% is at $1,391.
Whoa.
So 1 bedroom in Atlanta. So
okay.
Now let's move to the 2 bedroom. How much do you think the average 2 bedroom average rent in Georgia is for? Atlanta, Georgia.
15. You're looking at 15.
Wait,
15,
say that.
We're talking about 13.
Okay, say that again. You're kind of fading on occasion.
Okay, $1,500 or $1,600 a month.
It is $1,741. And that's at a decreased level of 4.92%. It decreased from last year.
Okay. Now I'm going to explain something to these people. Even if we was, and see, Kadada knows that this thing hits very, very close to home with me. Okay. It hits very, very close to home with me. Okay. Now, we find ourselves in the street fighting for, we call it the fight for 15, saying that the minimum wage needs to be at least $15 an hour. Okay, and I'm going to explain that because I make right at $16 an hour, okay, at my job. I make right at $16. And I can promise you, and this is after getting a raise a couple of months ago. So I can explain, I can assure you that if you only worked 8 hours a day at $15 an hour, you still can't afford that rent. $15 an hour ain't gonna damn cut it. And we keep talking about rising the minimum wage. I'm all for that, but what we need to be doing is working that from the other end. We need to work on capping costs. Because if we raise minimum wage, they just gonna raise the cost. Because now they see there's more money being pulled. There's more money being pulled into the stream, so they're just gonna increase the cost. You got to cap the cost and raise the wage. You got to decrease that gap. And the way that the system operates today, there's an inertial effect that takes place with the wage and where the costs are. As the wage pushes, it's just like a wave pushing a boat or a surfboard. As that wave goes, that thing goes with it. And whatever in front of it continues to move at the same rate that it always has. So if we move 15, the costs are going to stay where they are. And if we move to, let's say, 20, those costs are still going to be, that gap is going to maintain. So you now have to find another force to push those costs back closer to the wages, decreasing that gap. But this is the thing that gets me about affordable housing, okay? And this has become a trend. There, you a lot of you see these extended stay units around the place, and a lot of you probably look at these places, oh my God, that is just so terrible, blah, 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 blah. Well, I live in one of those. Now, most of you know that I spend time between LaGrange and Atlanta. Well, I spend majority of my time, because I work in Atlanta. So I'm here in this area, living in this extended stay, the majority of time. I see what's going on firsthand. I see what's going on firsthand. This is not a conjure in my mind because I'm listening to reports of experts and this, that, and other. I am sitting here firsthand watching these people live their lives. I'm living their lives with them in this situation. Now, most of the city councils in the area are attacking these places, saying, oh, they're hubs of sex trafficking and drugs and this, that, and the other.
Right.
I will tell you this from experience, sitting right here watching it today, that is a damn lie.
Well, because you call it a full-blown lie or just because there is some truth to that. Some extended states do have some sex trafficking issues.
But the truth of that matter inside of the extended stays, I'm not saying hotels and motels, I'm talking about the extended stays.
Okay.
The truth of that is, you know, you got elements of all of that anywhere human beings congregate. Hell, there's sex trafficking and fucking drug dealing happening in the fucking Prado. Okay?
That's true.
And drug in Virginia Highlands. Okay? That shit is happening in the Vining. That shit is happening in Eagles Landing. That shit is happening in fucking Gresham Park. It's happening regardless of the socioeconomic factors. It's happening in fucking Grant Park. It happens in Inman Park. Regardless of where you are, there's some element of this seedy underworld taking place. But we don't look into these nice neighborhoods that shit's happening in. Hell, when you see that you got your neighbors have a housekeeper. You don't know what that poor woman going through. She's an immigrant. You see an immigrant going over there. She works every day. You don't know what conditions she's working under. You don't know if her bosses are sexually abusing her. Are they sharing her around? Because this shit is happening. But we don't look at those neighborhoods because those are fine, upstanding people because they have money. Money provides morality in America. But by virtue of you being poor, you have a lack of morality. And I read a whole article about this on the Christian left about how, you know, we've started tying morality with prosperity and wealth, which that's a whole nother situation and a whole nother day.
Yeah. Well, to your point, well, first let me say thank you for sharing your story, because I think that the face of who lives in an extended stay or those type of situations, most people would not think that it's you, right? Most people would not think, oh, well, I actually know somebody who lives in an extended stay, because I know, Scout, our friend group. And I'm sure a lot of people are probably going to be like, wait, what? If they're listening, they're probably like, what is going on here? That is not who I know, because there's an assumption being made. And there's also friends of ours who are fighting to close these places down, not understanding that people like you, fine upstanding people that we just love so much, that there's actual families who are living in these places, because if you shut them down, where are they going to go?
And this is the thing. We have families here that some of them have been here for quite a while, and this is their home. And we also have people who just to live here because of the way they like. I mean, you got people who said, you know what? I don't want to have to maintain an apartment. I don't want to have to deal with this. I don't want to have to deal with that, because there's certain amenities that we have that actually make it a pretty decent deal. If you're somebody that you're not very sure that you want to live in a certain spot, you don't want to necessarily get a lease, you know, because you might say, you know what? This ain't working for me. I can bounce. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Point.
here, and I'm trying to figure out where I want to live, this, that, another, the third. This gives you some options. For me, it was a twofold thing. One, I didn't think I would be here as long as I've been here. Two, I mean, those of you who my marital situation know that, you know, there's some things that complicate me being able to get a regular apartment. So it was like, okay, I can come here. I don't have to pay this down payment or this first and last month's rent. I don't have to have a lease. So when I'm finally able, I can just go when I get ready. There's a whole bunch of things that go into this. So there's regular people who live here who just choose to live here. And that to me is a foundational violation of my constitutional rights. I have the right to live wherever the fuck I want to live.
Ooh, wait, hold on. I know you're getting fired up, but I think it's important. I want to pause at this section because I went and actually looked up the definition live because I was curious. Because I think we all have different definitions of living, per se. So I want to just give a definition of what it means to live, right? What does Webster's Dictionary, one of my favorite books,
We know you like definitions.
I do love a good definition. I do. Everything should be defined so that way we can have a clear understanding together. But anyway.
Right.
Anyway, so live, which is a verb. That's an action. It's a verb, people. All right. So first definition, it means to maintain oneself. And the key thing about living in America, this topic, is that we all have different understanding of what it means for maintenance, right? That means right. I might be living a $100,000 lifestyle. I might be living a $1 million lifestyle. I might be living a $15,000 lifestyle. But live, to maintain oneself. The other definition is to occupy a home. I thought that was really interesting. Because when you delve into what a home looks like, that can mean many different things. And the last one which caught my attention was to have a life rich in experiences. I mean,
it's
I kind of look at that and I kind of think of that and I'm like, wait a minute, that's what I want for my children. And that's really
right.
Hard. All three of those together are very hard to do in the United States at the moment.
Right. So let me go back on the fact that I'm going. If people have the right to live where they want to live, if that's what you choose to do. Now, some people are forced
right.
into it, but choosing. Now, if I decide, if I was a millionaire and I decided that I want to live at a penthouse at the Ritz-Carlton, nobody would think twice about me occupying that spot for 4 or 5 years at a time. It's still a fucking hotel. Right? But they have money, so they can do what they want to do. Nobody's telling them that they can't occupy that spot for more than 30 days or more than 60 days, as some of these ordinances do. And like the ordinance in Snailville, you not only can't stay in a extended stay more than 30 days at a time, but you also have to own a car. So why in the hell
That's
do
a level
I have
of privilege? But
to be
that,
able
wait,
to,
yeah, if we're gonna talk about Snellville, now here's the dumb thing about that being put in Snellville, and y'all know I do a lot of work in Gwinnett. Gwinnett is one of the places in the metro area that seems to refuse to want to have transit. Yet you're going to put out there that people need to have a car. But Gwinnett's also the place too that doesn't have any warming shelters for homeless people. But you know
What they're saying is the morality of the government there. Because what they're saying is that we don't want you here. Go somewhere else.
Yep.
That's what that says. We don't want you here. Go somewhere else. And a lot of people are trying to get on their feet. They may have been Gwinnettians before they got in their feet. They may have grown up there, and they fell upon hard times. I mean, and the thing is that once you start living in these places, the cycle of getting out is very hard because you pass by the roof usually. You can, you know, the minimum payment is biweekly. It's by the week. So every week you pay, for me, I pay around 200 something odd dollars, almost $300. Okay, so that's roughly a third of my paycheck every week. It's about a third. And then you look at that, I still have, you know, I still have children at home, so I still have to send money. I still, you know, and it's not a whole bunch that I have to send, but I also still got, I got to buy groceries. I got to be able to get, I got to deal with my transportation needs. I have to deal with the things that we regularly, everyday do in life. I got to pay my cell bill. I got to pay what little debts I still have. I got to pay all of that. So a lot of people don't realize how interesting cash flow operates. You are blessed when you pay, when you have to pay something once a month, when you have to go into your paycheck every week.
Every week,
like,
yeah, I didn't think about that.
If you pay, you pay once a month, you can take a piece out of this paycheck, a piece out of this paycheck. If there's an emergency, you can deal with that, and then you just have to take more out of the next paycheck, this, then the other. And some of us, because most of us don't have the ability to pay our rent out of one paycheck. It's usually a paycheck and a portion of another one, if you're a weekly worker. If you get paid every 2 weeks, you might be able to pull off your rent out of one paycheck if you're making the $15, $16 an hour, or you're making, like, the only reason $15, $16 an hour works for me is because I work 12 hours a day. So you get, you know, so for me, overtime is a wonderful thing, because then I start, once I hit 41 hours, hell, I start making $20-something dollars a damn hour. If I'm making, you know, so I work another whole half of a job, basically, at $23 an hour. And that allows me to be able to live pretty decently. But God forbid I'm only making 40 hours a week with taxes and health insurance and this, that, and the third, all of the deductions that come out of my check. It's crazy. So you look at all of this and how it takes, and you know, and like, again, I'm living this part of the American experience, and I'm watching other people deal with living this idea of the American experience. So I'm watching and observing, and then the only thing that makes me, that I feel insulted, is that I have access to these elected officials by being a member of the party. And I can have these conversations. And it's amazing to me when you start telling people shit, they go, oh, my God, I didn't know that. Well, the experts came and told me, have an agenda, people. Start going, instead of listening to where people are coming, if you were sitting on a city council or a county commission or even a state legislator, do not listen to these motherfuckers that's come sitting in front of y'all in the hearing.
Hey! You really excited about this, huh?
Get off your ass. Go out and visit some of these places in your damn district. Go talk to the people who live there. Because guess what? Some of them are registered to vote from that spot. And they vote. I see stickers around. I see peach stickers around here. I see them. People voting. And I'm lucky, because if I really, 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 really had to, I could go back to LaGrange. You know.
But, you know, a lot of people, though,
don't have that option.
They don't have the option, but let me just say this about the way that people vote. And to your point about having, you know, I think it is important for the people who represent us to hear, whether it's statistical data, but I also think it's also important for them to hear information from real people every day. Because what I'm finding is that if an AJC article comes out, and I love the AJC, that whatever's written in the article is gospel, right? Or if you see legislation or a bill that's being dropped and all you read is the abstract portion, which gives you the highest level of information for the, you know, whatever this legislation is going to be or wanting to become, you know, people don't have this thorough understanding of the how did we get there? Why is it here? Why are we even dropping this bill? Now, don't get me wrong. Now, there's some times where some of these bills are convoluted. Like there was a bill last year, I think I talked about, where they literally wanted to put scopes on guns to go kill Bambi. Okay, but you know we're not supposed to do that because that's not ethical type of hunting. But that was just another way to allow scopes, which are banned in Georgia, to be added in, you know, into mainstream life in Georgia, right? But there's other things that happen in legislation, you know, within legislation where the whys come forward and the mainstream public have no clue about it. So I say all that to say that I'm sure that, because, you know, right now, even though this has been going on for eons, right now, sex trafficking is the hottest buzzword on the planet, right? Everybody wants to be a part of it. Everybody wants to stop it. So what do? We target the locales where we believe it's happened or we've had incidences of it happening, right? Because all of this is still marketing. It is a marketing machine. If there was one incident at one location of somebody being trafficked at that location, well, we got to shut all of them down. So for one instance, it's all of them, not understanding that there's people who live there, there's families that live there. Because now, let's see how it's all connected. We want to talk about how we want wraparound services for children. We want to make sure that their families are safe and sound because we want them to come to school. Well, if you say to a family who's living in a extended stay or a short term or some hotel, you can only be there for 30 days. That child is no longer stable and cannot be a stable student in your school district because they're moving every 30 days. And then you want to complain because the child does not know how to read, cannot function properly, and then you go back and you tell the governor, well, look, I need more money.
Right.
I need more money for services. But guess what? We cut the budget because there's no money for counselors or anything of that nature. And when go ahead.
Because you're absolutely right. Because I mean, I watched that too. The school system here in Rockdale has done, I think, a pretty decent job because I see, you know, public school officials here. I noticed that, you know, they have good transportation service. Now, see, that problem hasn't come to Rockdale yet. You know, they haven't attacked us here on that yet. And I'm trying to get ahead of that curve here because I started talking to the management here and I started talking to the people that are involved in politics here already.
Mm-hmm.
To try to make sure that they got an understanding of this issue before it even becomes an issue. But, you know, there's also another piece on that is that because, you know, if you're only here for 30 days, during that first period, the governing entities can collect tax, the hotel tax. After 30 days, that's no longer considered. You're not considered a hotel patron anymore. You're considered a resident, and they can't charge you a tax for that. So it's also looking at how can we get the most revenue out of these places.
Mm-hmm.
So there's another element added into that. You know, I can increase my revenue for this if I do that. Now, where's that increased revenue? Where's that being targeted to? Because most hotel taxes are earmarked for your tourists and whatever in your chamber of commerce to run it. It's not going to the school board to help stabilize these students that you're going to displace. It's going to the chamber of commerce and any tourists and whoever promotes tourism in your area. That's where that's going to go. So, again, that's going to promote more money to go promote business and whatnot, and not promoting people. So
the question is, but when you do this, right, when we challenge these laws, because they're coming, and because it's always laws are made by the people that scream the loudest, so more than likely there's going to be a lot of restrictions on these extended stays and other properties. So where do people go to live? Because if rent is starting at, and not granted, I know in Atlanta Metro, like if you're down on Peachtree, I know that there's exorbitant rent. I mean, I don't even pay. I have a 3-bedroom apartment, and I don't pay $1,741. I'm still at around $1,288. And so, but where do people go? Because I know that being in San Jose, you probably spend close to maybe $1,200 in rent.
Right.
A month. And so, but and I would want to say, well, then go get a regular apartment. But like you said before, it's first and last month's rent.
Yes, it's the cost of money, because if you got to go into an apartment, you got to pay an application fee that is non-refundable. And some people, let's be honest, you know, we still do credit checks and shit to get an apartment. And some people, like if you meet and you lost your house during the Great Recession, and, you know, your credit took a hit during the Great Recession, and you're still recovering, and you also went through a divorce during that same time period, which even killed you even more. You still trying to get, because I'm going to tell you where there's a lot of, next to family, we have a lot of single men. In the 40s, that is a major demographic. And the thing is, everybody works. Everybody's working. Everybody's working. You see these guys coming in. Some of them got suits and ties on. Some of them got, you know, some of them are blue collar working like I am. Some of these guys are, you know, you see they're chefs. You see these guys coming in, and all of us pretty much have the same story. You know, I was married. I got kids. You know, the recession came, and you know how finances strain marriages, this, then the other. So we end up splitting. You know, I couldn't afford to live on my own, so this is where I ended up. And I'm still having to, you know, these guys, you know, all of us have the same story, paying child support, this, then the other, still trying to be fathers. And it's just hard. And that this also ties into another situation that we see that, you know, and this affects a lot of different things in our culture, because, you know, how, I don't know if you've ever heard this term, homosexual.
A what?
Hobosexual.
What
as in homosexual. It means that this a guy or a woman who has an unstable living environment will form relationships with people so they have somewhere to live.
You mean cuffing season, Scout?
Yeah.
Stop it.
So you
Stop
have guys
it today. Ladies,
who are trying to find somebody who will like them enough
Let
to
them
say,
come
hey,
live there.
Yes. That will, no, I'm not talking about come live here, but want to, that's trying to get out of here.
So we're going to pretend that we're in a whole relationship just so that you have a stable living environment? Is that what you're talking about?
And I've seen it.
Well, you know, now that I think about it, I can think of somebody that I know like that.
People are not, because I've had people approach me, hey, you know, you got women friends and this, that, and the other, and the third. Why don't you just get with one of them and go live with them? Because I ain't about that life.
Oh, Lord.
Well, to live with
we're
this person.
We're not going to promote that. We're not going to promote this.
And we're not. But I want to say that is an element that comes involved in that we don't even see. But so while you're talking about, you know, sex trafficking, this, then the other, you got that element too that's being pushed out there. So you starting to have people starting to do things. And you got to realize, if you get into those situations, guess what they're starting to promote in these houses where these people go? Because the moment somebody realizes that you're not really there for them, then that causes a whole nother situation. Then we start looking at reports. We look at increases in domestic violence. We start looking at increases in alcohol and drug abuse because you're trying to cope.
Right.
All of this has a cascading effect. It has a cascading effect just because, for one reason and one reason only. And I'm going to tell you what the root cause of it is. American greed. Because our governments are quicker to sign off on a development that will have $1,500 one-bedroom apartment than to sign off on a development that will provide transportation and affordable housing.
Yeah, but here's the thing with the developers. They know we're going to pay it because we have to. We
right.
have to
but
have a
what,
place
but
to live.
But guess what?
We have
just
to
like
have a place. We have to have a find a place home. Huh?
But this, just like the government can tell somebody who lives in an extended stay, you have to have a car to live there. The government, that same government can tell a developer, okay, you can build this, but I'm going to need you to partner with us to build another development, and we'll come with some of the money with it to help us get some affordable housing going on. Or give us actually enforcing some of these clauses in these contracts that call for X amount of units to have affordable housing.
But we can't even agree on what the definition, here I go with the definition again, of affordable. We can't, because some people might say $1,500 is affordable. Some people
okay.
say, no, wait a minute, it's not affordable.
Calculator. If you look at the living wage calculator, which sets the living wages in each of the different, you know, census identification areas, none of those living wages, this is what you should be paying for, in this area, none of that shit matches up. None of that shit matches up. So if you're sitting there saying that, okay, the average rent for a one-bedroom apartment in the Atlanta metro area is $1,300, then that means in $1,300, and what the government says you should be spending for affordable housing is 33% of your wages, which is a third. Then that would mean, let's do the math, because, you know, I'm not a math in the head person, but let's do the math, because that's what it's going to come down to. So if you got $1,300, is that, what is that a third of?
I don't know.
I'm trying to calculate.
Make the money and spend the money.
This option don't fail me now.
You asking way too much.
You basically, to do that, you for that to be a third of your wages, you have to break $3,500 a month.
Wait, you said $3,500 a month?
If $1,300 is your average rent, you have to make right at $3,900 a month for that to be a third of your wages. That, then you take and divide that. That puts you at $2,460 an hour.
But it doesn't matter, Scout. What you're thinking about is because what you're failing to realize is that we are going to pay it because we need accommodations, because we need a roof over our head for our families. Now, the true cost of that is that not only am I going to pay the $1,300, the $1,500, the $1,800 to ensure that my family has a roof over their head, what this means, though, is that, well, guess what? They may not ever be able to eat three full meals a day.
Right.
Because
all
food
they
is
never,
going to get cut.
There's really, what was your third for living? You'll never meet that criteria because you're gonna have to work two jobs, one and a half jobs, to work and hustle. You had to do this, then the other, and the third to make it. But let's stop for a second now, because I want to be able to hear from people that's out there. If you're listening and you have a story to tell or you have an opinion about this, you know our call-in number is 563-999-560. Again, that is 563-999-560. Call in because this is the problem, particularly here in Georgia. But and the lines are now open. So
I don't know. It's one of those things, because I have a problem with this concept of affordable, even the term affordable housing, because some people don't like the term. Some people prefer the term living wage housing. Low income housing brings forward like projects. And so, here's, did I already say workforce housing? You know, so that way our firefighters and our teachers. But I mean, the question is, how are people doing it? Because people are actually doing this. They are actually, whether it's the mortgage, because some of these mortgages are ridiculous, because honestly, even to buy a home in the state of Georgia, the average median home price in Georgia is actually $325,000, even though what sold on average was only about $241,000. So, I mean, who's living in these houses? Who's renting these apartments? I mean, there was an article floating around the internet the other day about how two black women decided to finally live together, right? They both have children. They just collectively went in and rented a home together. Now, to me, that makes sense. I mean, I'm 44 years old. I was just like, wow, I can't believe that someone had to write an article about this for people to go, oh, wow, I never thought about that. Because when you don't have enough money, that might be the option to go. Especially when, if you're living in a bad neighborhood, you might want to collectively get your money and move to a different neighborhood for safety reasons, for school, for your children. I mean, who's living in these homes and how are they affording their mortgage or their rent? Because everybody does not make over $100,000 a year.
Right. Right. There's all these different of scenarios in which people are trying to find a way to be able to live. Like I said, the worst scenario is the one I just talked about. You got people entering whole-ass relationships. Then you got people who assign themselves to be roommates. You know, roommate situations where you got, you know, we all, if you was a person who watched a lot of television in the 90s, you all remember Friends, the television show Friends.
Yep. But that's New York City. This is Atlanta.
Right. You got all these people who've living together in a flat, you know, trying to eke out a life, this, that, and the other. And you're like, well, they live the most wonderful lives, this, that, and the other. No, those people were damn struggling.
That's why they have roommates.
Right. You know, and I mean, I've had conversations in with friends, you know, you having a hard time paying your rent and this, that, and the other. I did this, that, and the third. You know, let's be roommates. You know, I've entered conversations in with people like that, but in the day it goes like, damn, I love my independence that I still have. And so that's another situation, that the dignity of being able to live on your own. And we've all talked about this in America. Because see, one of the things that we do that is not prevalent in a lot of cultures is that we have this independent streak that we even instill in our children. You know, we tell our children, get out. I'm guilty. I'm guilty. My parents were guilty. And so you get these, you get who have anxiety, because that's what they're being raised in, like, oh, I'm 18 and I got to go out here and try to live on my own, and rent is $1,300 a month, and I'm 18 years old, and I just graduated high school.
Right. How do you do that?
You're not going to college. So then you get kids who, you know, like me, I didn't want to go off to college right away. And I know my parents were like, you got to go because you're grown now. So and I wanted to do this. It wasn't like I was forced to, but my option was join the military. They're going to provide me somewhere to live. They're going to put clothes on my back, and they're going to put food in my belly. At least that was everybody's thing. But, you know, and I don't even want to get into that.
But we've got college graduates who cannot afford the rent. Because the secret of some of the college graduates is that they are living in apartments with other people. They have roommates. And that is not something that, you know, most of us feel like that's what we want to do. I mean, we have college roommates in college. We don't expect to, you know, you shouldn't make $50,000 a year and find out you have to have two roommates to afford rent.
Right. And see, the thing is, you know, our culture is not built for us to, you know, stay at home with our parents a little longer. Now, some people are starting to get the idea, and some parents are starting to get the idea, you know what, for everybody, because the thing is, parents, and we all, for those of us who have grown children, if your children leave and they get out there and they start struggling, guess what you're going to end up doing? You're going to help them. For the most part, if you can afford to, you're going to help them. So why not just let their asses stay at home? Seriously, just let them stay at home. They were living there anyway. You got them because their bedroom is still there. You know, share the cost. I know
they want to be grown. That's why.
Yeah, but we have to. You know, that comes if we can't handle it on the. And this is just one group of people. This isn't about those of people who are indigent. We're talking about people who right now. We're talking about middle class folks who are going through this thing. That's what I'm talking about specifically right now. We have to change our paradigm on how we see living. But on our own, this, that, and the other, because other cultures, you stay with your parents until you're capable of going out there on your own. You go get married or have kids or whatever. But then that causes a whole other situation about being respectful of your parents and understanding that you can't do what the hell you want to do because you're in their house. We got to humble, you know, in that case, you got to learn how to humble yourself and just do what you got to do. I mean, I lived with my parents for a little while. A couple of years ago while I was working a political race. And it was interesting to say the least. You know, and
it's hard to have a whole adult relationship with another person if you're living with your parents, if you're living in your parents' house.
Right. You know what I'm saying? And that becomes a whole other issue, particularly once you've been married a while and this, then the third, and he was like, you know, I'm a grown-ass man. So it's like, you can't do stuff. And, you know, I'm going to say this as a man. I'm 46 years old. If I was sitting there, women take better to me living here than I would if I said I live with my mom and my dad. And really, to be honest with that's a paradigm shift that needs to be looked at differently also. Because if you have somebody who is, wise enough to know, hey, I need to be able to save money and do this, that, and the other, so therefore I'm willing to sacrifice certain things to make sure that I can attain my goal. That is better than a person who is willing to go out there and struggle just for fucking damn ego sake. Because if you got
that. I get that. I respect that.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Because if a person got that kind of ego, you also may have other issues with them. At least if that person can say, hey, I understand my situation, and I need to be able to do X, Y, and Z, and I'm willing to sacrifice. This person also going to be willing to sacrifice inside of relationships. So it's amazing how relationships, politics, and all that shit merge in to what the American dream is supposed to be. Because this just isn't a political situation. It just isn't an economic situation, but it's also a social situation. And all of them merge in together to weave the fabric of what we're trying to get. So we really need to sit there and think about those things. But the big thing for me is affordable housing and transportation. And I think we, from a political standpoint, are failing miserably on that because we're listening to people who are trying to perpetuate the greed factor here. And what they are failing to realize, these people are trying to make short-term profit gains versus long-term stability for the economies that they're operating in. Because I promise you, if you give sustainable and affordable housing and you give good transportation options, it is going to do nothing but increase the size of our economy over time. There's more profits to be made over the long term than it is in the short term. But we have a bad thing in America about trying to get rich quick instead of trying to build sustainable wealth. I mean, and I'm not a socialist by no means aspect of the word, but there are situations in which the government can come in and do a little planning to help build up the actual free market economy. And this is one of those things, transportation and housing. Because once you get a transportation and housing affordable and sustainable, people have more disposable income. And what do Americans do with their disposable income? They spend it on goods and services. That means that there's more production that has to be done. There's more people need to be serving. That means that there's more jobs being created. Therefore, turn around doing what? Putting more money back into the economy because there's now more people who have more disposable income. You will get your money over the long term, but everybody wants to make a quick dollar. Okay, I know you got to be somewhere at 11:30, so now I want to switch gears just a little bit. And I want to talk about Iowa, because I said we were
going
to talk about
it. I'm not going to Iowa, though.
But the Iowa caucuses are tomorrow. Okay?
Oh, boy.
First in the nation vote. We're going to get the first chance to see. After all of this damn 18 months, we've been watching these presidential candidates wrangle. We're gonna see who really has captured the minds of the people. Now, I was talking about the article that I shared with Kadada earlier this morning that came from the Washington Post that talked about Iowa being the first in the nation and how it has a unequal effect on how we see our presidential candidates. And Iowa is 90% white.
Right.
It looks nothing like our country. New Hampshire, which will be a week from this election or these caucuses, it's the same thing. It's upwards of 80 to 90% white. And so the article was saying that, so the person who they were talking about in the article, a college professor, I assume, was talking to their students about in their classes of which state would best represent being the first state to vote in this in these presidential cycles, which would be the state demographically that will best represent America. And guess what state the students chose? The great state of
Georgia. Georgia.
You know, Georgia's economy is diverse enough. The demographics are diverse enough to we actually could be a good indication of which way the nation would swing. You know, and I agree with that because the only other place that I could say that might have a similar diversity situation would be maybe Texas or California.
Probably go to California.
I was in Texas last weekend, and the diversity, particularly in the Houston area, amazed me. Because I had never been in a major American city where black folks were not the majority or not a heavy majority, where there was an actual, like, very diverse pool. And it was interesting on how things just flowed around now. It's interesting. So we all still know that race plays a key in a lot of things. It does. But Georgia, and I can see that very easily, being that I'm a native Georgian, there's a lot about Georgia that has always, to me, said America. Because, the population kind of fails out right now. When you talk about, ratio-wise, there's more black people per capita in Georgia than there is in the United States as a whole, because we make up like 34% of the population here. But the voting blocks are strong enough to actually say, okay, this is the way Americans would vote. And I think it's one of the reasons that Georgia has become a battleground state. But going back to the caucuses tomorrow, it's going to be interesting because I've been doing, my top five since the races started back 18 months ago. And it's changed.
It seems like forever.
Yeah, it's changed a couple of times, but my top pick has never changed. And my top pick so far, this is not Georgia, this is not who I'm saying is I'm going to end up voting for when the elections take place here in Georgia, but this is just how I see it playing out. I've been saying that Joe Biden is a top rider for a while. Now, the number two spot has fluctuated a whole hell of a lot, because at one time I had Warren in the number two spot. She failed some, and Pete Buttigieg rolled up in there. Bernie got there for a minute, but then Bernie. And my top five right now, you know, I got Joe Biden, Pete Buttigieg, Elizabeth Warren, Andrew Yang, then Bernie. But, and there was one person that I would never even get consideration to that is starting to, I'm starting to pay some attention to, and that's Amy Klobuchar. Now, I also want to give an honorable mention to Mike Bloomberg. Now, Tom Steyer.
Let me give a shout out to Mike Bloomberg. He's a New Yorker, so I appreciate that.
You know, and I'm going to tell you why. Now, I know a lot of people going like, oh, hell, he's just another billionaire. But I don't think Mike really thinks he's good. I don't know how that's rolling, and I'm really kind of, you know, want to be, but I want to be very cautious in how I state this. But I think Mike is in this really to figure out, if by any means possible, let's get rid of Trump. Because they know each other.
Right.
Yeah, and they have never been friends.
Yep. New Yorkers going at it.
They've never been friends. They've been two opposite ends of the spectrum the whole damn time. Regardless of, you know, because Trump used to be a damn Democrat and Mike used to be a damn Republican, and now they don't switch sides. But this is America. That shit switches on a regular basis for certain people. Certain people who ideologically switch just based on what's going on around them. And I actually trust people who ideologically evolve over time than those people who are strict purists. Because purists scare me. Because you can't think in a different paradigm at all. Nothing ever can come in and sway you. And you will do dangerous shit just because you're trying to stick to purists.
People who can adapt. Bernie people.
Now, I don't like people who swing radically all the time, but I like people who can give me a good argument on to why their thought patterns can change or why they're changing. Because I was a major supporter of Bernie Sanders in 2016. I still agree with a lot of what he talks about. I just don't think that who needs to be president at this particular moment in time. In 2016, I thought that, and he would have been a great president coming into in 2016, but not coming after this shit show we didn't have for the last 4 years. I need somebody who actually, and I hate to say this, and Bernie supporters are probably going to ready to hang me on this one, but let's be honest. We've had the conversations about who has passed bills and who's done a lot of damn talking. Bernie, and we had this conversation in 2016, but it was like, okay, we need somebody who got great ideas at this point. But we now need
somebody who's a builder.
Yeah, we need a builder. We need a builder. We need somebody who's not going to talk a good talk, but who can do action. And I look at the people, as you passed a bad bill or a good bill, but you got a damn bill passed. That leaves me in talking about Joe Biden. And that leaves me talking about people like Pete Buttigieg, who's actually governed as executive. That leads me to talking about people like Elizabeth Warren, who've actually gotten shit done, like the Consumer Protection Bureau. That will let me talk about a Mike Bloomberg who's built a business, a Tom Steyer who came out of nowhere with need to impeach. That talks to me.
I really don't know much about Tom Steyer, and I haven't really, and I'm going to be honest and say I'm not really trying to go do any research on him either.
He just
popped up and was just like, okay, I'm in the race. I cut a check. Not that Bloomberg didn't do the same thing, but I know about Bloomberg being a New Yorker. So Tom Steyer,
right.
I'm like, all right, whatever.
So Tom Steyer, you know, if you really pay attention, he's been in our face for like the last 2.5 years because he's the one who came up with the knee. He's the one who had us all signing the petition about impeaching Trump. I kind of knew Buddy was getting ready to run for president when he did that. So that's like a given in political circles. Find something to get onto, start a petition, so So one, that builds your mailing list.
Right, exactly.
Pro tip, people. Campaign pro tip. Y'all got to hear them down south and dirt. Campaign pro tip. If you want to build your list, start a petition about something that people are, that people want. You get your list. Because if they sign your potential donor right now, this is why some of y'all got to be really careful about when you're just jumping into these races. You got to be thinking long term. You know you want to be an elected official. But this is why, and this is a shameless plug, this is why y'all need to come talk to me and Kadada. Come talk to me and Kadada. We'll help y'all out down the road. Hey, this is a podcast. Podcast is supposed to, you know, if you're podcasting and you're in a certain business, you're supposed to plug yourself every once in a while. Me and Kadada are a political consultant, so hey, that's what we do. Come talk to us. So, hey. And I'm gonna start being shameless in 2020 because the rest of y'all are getting y'all bags. I ain't even trying to play with y'all like that no more. But when we get to talking about these people who are doers versus talkers, and Kubashar here lately has been talking about that a lot. And I don't know if it's just rhetoric to attack the more progressive candidates in the race, but she's absolutely right. We as Democrats have spent the last 4 years talking about one thing, and we couldn't even get that one thing done. And kick him out of office. We spent all of our freaking time trying to get that done, and we couldn't get that done. And most of the rank and file Democrats said, y'all understand how this works. The Senate is never going to give y'all that.
But, you know, here's what's really interesting about this.
Well, to beat him at the ballot box.
That's only what's going to happen. But you know what Democrats need to learn? You know, and Democrats are the moral compass of the world, apparently. Everything has to be right, and we're touchy-feely. And, you know, we talked about this before as well, that Democrats aren't really good at strategy. And the rule is, one of the top rules in conflict is that if the other party, and I'm going to say it this way, if the other party is not studying you, stop what you're doing and wait until you hear them speak something that reflects your language so that way you have something to build upon. And this whole impeachment process has been a waste of money, taxpayer time, and things, and we've lost the opportunity to work on some issues that are really important. In case in point, where the Iowa caucuses are going to be held. There's a little town in Iowa that had been underwater for 6 months. No one, after the few days of the outrage of, oh my gosh, climate change and whatever, has ever gone back except for two people. Two legislators have gone back in this whole time. And yet they're going back to Iowa now for the caucuses after they spent this last 4 or 5 weeks while people are still hungry, while people can't get into this country because Trump's travel bans have prevented them from coming home, preventing their mates from entering into this country. But we're sitting here doing a show to make other Democrats feel good as if we're doing something when nothing was accomplished. You never fight an enemy that has already told you we want nothing to do with you and we're not listening. Especially when we have no power. And we know Democrats have wasted a whole lot of time to feel good, to say, oh my gosh.
our goal should have been to be prepared to beat him at the ballot box. Now, I understand that's going to be the strategy now, but what were we doing? You know, people like myself, we've been thinking about this beating him at the ballot box from the get go because we knew this wasn't going to work. But the thing is now, that's where we got to go because you're not kicking him out of office. You've now actually given him momentum among his base. And then there's this group that our party ignores from time, but for a lot of time, and they're called independent. We act like that group does not really that fit. But they make up a third of the electorate. And they go both ways. These are thinkers. Most of the independents that I come across are thinkers. They're thinkers. And they go based on, okay, what's going to be really good? You know, what are you doing? how can this affect, and it's not, you know, they not really, you know, some people, oh, they racially motivate. No, they're going, they practical people. They don't go for the rhetoric of either side. They want to say, okay, what's the best path forward? Who is going to get something done? And see, the thing about America that can be disheartening at times, if you're doing something, and this is human history, who's ever doing something people like, even when they're doing something bad.
Right.
But if you're just talking, regardless of how good your talking sounds, if there's no actions backing that shit up, nobody will follow you. Donald Trump gets followers because of the simple fact he does shit. It's the stupidest shit in the world, but he does it.
Yep, he does it. Yep.
Damn it, this bitch figures all kinds of ways to get this wall down built. If the wind can blow it over, but that was a wall.
Yep.
Ban Muslims? Hell, we fought it and fought it and fought it. He figured out he might not have banned all the Muslims he wanted to ban, but he got some of them.
Wait, can we talk about how the fact that he just extended the travel ban and how, like, all the Nigerians were shocked? I was shocked the Nigerians ended up on the list, too. I'm not going to lie.
But see, and that again, oh my God, that's a whole other show. That's a whole other show about Africa that I'm going to have to do because, you know, oh, just so everybody get it, it is Black History Month, day two.
Oh,
and
it is.
Black History Month. I pulled away from doing that because we all by now know about who the hell Benjamin Banneker is.
Come on,
okay.
Come through. Yep, who Martin Luther King is.
We know all of that. How we deal with Black History Month is that Black people need to start making history. Stop looking at the past and start looking for what can we do today. Because we don't learn enough about our past. You know, I'm not going to go start picking through this person really invented this and this person really. No. We're going to talk about what can we do today to create new Black history. This is why we're talking about affordable housing. Because guess what? I'm not worried about none of that shit. Until I got, you know, and this is the average American, average Black person. They're not worried about voting or none of this shit until they know they got food in their belly, over their head, and a way to get to work to get all the money they need to do all that. That is temporarily inspiring, but it's not helping me get move forward.
Right.
So we need to come to Black History Month moving forward. Okay, let's stop doing the stupid shit and let's get something done. You know, and the people that I'm kind of surround myself with these days are people who are doers. They're less talkers, they're more doers. People who say, I want to do this, and then you see action. People who say, hey, I'm tired of being poor, I want to make some money. Boom, they're doing something. They're making action. Because you cannot continue to wait on anybody to give you anything, because waiting for somebody to give you something is like talking about it. And this is what our party will show us. Is it going to be about the doers or the talkers? Because we in the Democratic Party like people who can talk a damn good game. You know, I'm going to speak for myself right quick. Remember the Democratic Party. Because I've been meaning to get into some of these folks' ass for a minute. You know, because we got members of our party right here in Georgia who like to whine and cry about every goddamn.
Whoa. Be mad if you want to. Are you going to name people, though?
I might.
Oh, okay.
Well, I might just name groups of them and not call them out individually just yet, because I don't feel like that's nobody. But
okay,
about things all day long. They talk about corruption and this, that, and the third. And then they want you to do things that are just basically what you just accused the other side of doing.
Yep.
Okay. If you say that the party is clicked up and these cliques support each other and this, that, and the third, and that's wrong, so why would you ask me to do something because I'm your friend, to do something just because I'm your friend? We're doing the same thing they're doing. I am chairman of affairs for the Democratic Party of Georgia. My job is to make sure I do the right thing, not do what you want me to do, but do the right thing. Okay? That's what I do the right thing. Now, I've learned not to grandstand because the job that I have to do should best be done in the back, in the back room. It should be done in silence. I'm not trying to make a name for myself. I'm trying to get the right thing done. So I'm not going to scream and holler every time I do something. But promise and believe, people, work is getting done. Things are taking place. I'm not trying to embarrass nobody. I'm not trying to destroy anybody. I'm not trying to do any of that you people want me to do. Because at the end of the day, we're all volunteers when it comes to the party, and we're not getting paid to do this. Why are you going to destroy whole people's lives over the fact that you want a damn post seat or you want a damn title? Get your whole damn lives and priority together. You're trying to stop a person who is a true dictator from being president of the United States and stop all of his little minions from getting positions in power that can actually affect our lives. Get over yourselves and your egos. And let's get the work done. And if you don't want to get the work done and you just worried about what you can get, go sit your ass down in a corner.
It sounds like you've had a real rough week.
Go sit your ass down in a corner somewhere. Stop going up in these people's meetings, raising hell, and expecting people to just be like, okay, you let them do what the hell they want to do. You go up in there calling people out their name, talking about them, this, that, and other. No, they ain't going
to. Yeah, a lot of that is spreading.
And people,
a
and
lot
all
of
you,
that is spreading in the Democratic Party.
And if you complain all the time, people don't like people who complain all the time. Nobody wants to be led by a complainer. They want to be led by doers. Go in and do the work. Stop coming in trying to take over day one. Because that ain't how it works. It's never worked like that in 5,000 human history. You're not going to walk up into a group and just damn take over unless you got guns and knives. And we don't do that here in America, so that means you need to sit down and wait your damn turn. Prove people that you are worthy and stop talking about what y'all haven't done and what you ain't going to do and how you can do this differently. Show people you're right. I mean, I got Republican friends who talk to me about that on a regular basis. You know, y'all Democrats are some smart people if y'all just learn how to do some shit. And I can't lie. I can't say shit about that because I know they're right. And so I want to be that Democrat. Let's do some shit. There's some things I said I'm going to do, and guess what, people? I'm doing them. Y'all going to see evidence of it here soon. There's a lot of people who are doing good work in the party who are doing it very quietly. And you're finna see evidence of it very soon. You got people who are doing work and they're very loud about it, but they doing work. But y'all, some of y'all are being loud and they're doing a damn thing. I need you to sit your ass down somewhere. Let us do the work and you follow. Do what the hell we tell you to do.
Oh, we're not dictators.
No, but hell, but there's a hierarchy in this. This is not a free for all. This is an organized.
Thank you.
There's leaders and there's
conversation.
There's leaders and followers. And if you got leaders and you got followers and you happen to not be in leadership, that means you're a follower. That means you need to do what you told. So you can organize enough people to get you elected into a position of leadership. That's what you need to be doing. Instead of hollering, you need to be doing something and organize. If you believe that you're right, go organize your like-minded people. But while y'all thinking about overthrowing this, that, and the other, and the third, get some people to go register. Get some people registered to vote. Get some people to actually go out and vote. Go work for a local. Go work for a campaign. Stop bothering us who are trying to do the work with your bullshit.
Lord, I got 2 minutes, and it sounds like Scout was, I don't know who it was that upset Scout this week, but I'm going to need y'all to get it together so we can start
y'all,
this week, upcoming week off very well.
Because okay. If y'all coming, y'all still playing this shit next week, I'm calling names next week. I'm calling names next week. If I keep getting this bullshit, I'm calling names next week.
Well, in the last minute that I have, I just want to say shout out to Dr. Raphael Warnock for entering into the Senate race.
Hey. girl.
Hey. And let the races begin as we are coming up towards the primaries. It is primary season in Georgia, people. And it is getting crazier and crazier. More to come.
All right, folks. Well,
yeah. I'm gonna go.
Y'all hold it down. Do the downsides and dirty. We're out. Peace.